Streaming's the present and seemingly the future too, but what about the past, the earliest days of the Australian media? This weekend, Sunday, is the 200th anniversary of the death of Arthur Phillip, commander of the First Fleet and the colony's first governor. Historian Grace Karskens says Phillip brought with him a printing press, which was used to get out the government notices, most of which were orders.
That's interesting in itself, because we have to remember that half the convicts were, and probably the soldiers too, were not literate. So theirs is an oral world, an oral world. Theirs is the world of the spoken word. But half of them were. So we actually have got a combined world of oral and written and read.
So how do you get around that, though? I mean, obviously, half of the people can, more or less half, can read it, and I suppose they can tell their mates. But if you want to broadcast it, how did they do that?
Well, you have the notices, and you can stick them up on a tree. But if you couldn't read that, you probably also had a town crier. I'm not sure if Phillip had one, but I'm pretty sure he would have. I mean, that's how you get the news out. And the orders that they published constantly they kind of read like a newspaper. If you read them now, they're all in the historical records of Australia. You can read them. You can go to the library and read them now. And they do read a little bit like a news sheet, because you kind of know what's going on from the orders that they're saying. Nobody is allowed to do their washing in the tank stream anymore. So that means you know that they're doing their washing in the tank stream. So you just got to read them backwards.
In terms of news from the outside world, how did that get there? How did that get to Sydney, to the colony?
Ah, well, this is when we look at the ocean, we must think of it not as a barrier, but as the great link. So the ships, everyone watches the ships in the harbour all the time. They watch the heads in Sydney. You can actually, from the top of the rocks, you could see out to the heads, and you watch for that little sail on the horizon. Everyone in the town went completely crazy and raced down to meet those ships, because those ships carried news from home. They were the link with home.
But that news, it's the wrong word for it almost, because
it's a bit out of date.
It was, what, 6, 8, 9, 10 months old?
Yes, that's right.
And everybody would have known that.
That's right. And this is the pre-industrial world. This is the world before the telegraph, before the internet. News was old, but it was news. It was news to them.
Do we know anything at all about how the Indigenous people shared news of this momentous event, these white people arriving in and taking over their land and appearing to be preparing to stay?
They knew straight away. They'd seen Cook arrive. And some historians say, it must have been a terrible shock to see Cook's Endeavour sailing into Botany Bay in 1770. I don't think so. I know that there were paths all the way along the coast, and the Aboriginal people had messengers that ran in between the tribes, you know, one to the other, to the other. And we know that that every place along the coast and in Australia was occupied by Aboriginal people. We know that they saw people to the south, I think around Jervis Bay. That news would have travelled up faster, up the coast, faster than the Endeavour would have made up the coast. And lo and behold, 18 years later, there's the First Fleet. Only this is much bigger. Like, I think they would have known, because they had these very fast communication networks with messengers running between group to group, and then the next one would go and the next one would go.
How much or how important do you think Phillip saw the establishment of some kind of information news system?
Well, at his stage, the colony was pretty small. I mean, it was still probably less than 5,000 people. He probably relied on word of mouth. As far as I know, he didn't do anything about establishing a newspaper or anything else. That didn't actually happen till about 15 years later in 1803 with the Sydney Gazette.
Now, that's interesting, because this is the arrival of George Howe, who was a convict, but he had been a printer.
Yes. Yes.
And he set up the Gazette.
Yes.
But this was sort of him, but it was sort of the governor too, wasn't it? Governor King by then.
It was Governor Phillip Gidley King, who actually is not recognised enough for what he did. I mean, he actually brought a lot of regulation to the colony when he came. And one of those things was to sit down a newspaper. And a newspaper, as we know, is something that a maturing community has. It creates a community out of disparate people. Because by the time King arrives, he started in 1800... the colony's expanded quite a bit, and there's frontiers out on the Hawkesbury Nepean. That doesn't seem a long way now, but it was, you know, really isolated then. So King establishes a newspaper, and the newspaper is very lively. He also uses
So is it seen as a proper paper, or is it seen as a kind of propaganda sheet from the government?
I'm glad you asked that, because I've found that modern media scholars treat it in the latter way, as it's a propaganda sheet. It's, you know, gone through by the governor and censored and everything. I don't think that's true. I think that George Howe basically wrote most of it himself. There's a lot of comedy in there, a lot of kind of a bit of proselytizing and sermonizing and everything. It's very lively. And he reports all kinds of happenings and everything from sailors getting drunk on the rocks and, you know, falling down the rocks because it's so steep, and lots and lots and lots about women entrepreneurs and their businesses. There are lots of ads in the paper about, you know, who's selling what and who's doing what to whom. Lots of gossip about, you know, kind of sexual and romantic stories. Lots of stuff about Aboriginal people. This newspaper opens the window on this entire early colony.
You're talking about a time, Grace, when paper was relatively scarce and it was very expensive compared to now. How did that work out with about half the population who could read?
I think, in fact, I know that the paper was read out loud in the pubs. There were lots of hotels. This is popular culture's been established, drinking, gambling, fighting, all those sorts of things. Pre-industrial popular culture, our proud tradition.
Still got it today.
Yeah, I know. And this was all reported in the Gazette. So that's another, you know, part of my argument, that this is a proper paper because it's revealing what's actually happening in society. I mean, if King was vetting it all, he probably would have cut all that out, because that wasn't supposed to happen in the, you know, the organised convict colony. But getting back to the dissemination, of course, if you have an audience that's illiterate, then one person could probably read out of this, could read out of this expensive newspaper in the hotel, maybe in the home, and then everyone else would listen. And if you actually read the Gazette now, it's better read out loud.
It's written to be read out
loud. It's written to be read out loud. And that's how George Howe wrote it. And he had a great sense of humour. He was always sending up, you know, people who were pretentious. And it's a great read. And you know what's so great? It's on Trove now, so you can search it and you can read it yourself.
We've talked about the establishment of the Gazette, and you're convinced it's a proper paper. Did it play any part in reporting back to London on the colony? I mean, obviously the governors were in official communication with head office, as it were. But what about the newspaper? Did they do anything?
The newspaper was prized, actually. It was quite expensive, really, for the time. And what people did was send it back to England as a record of the colony, because I don't think people realise enough how interested people in Britain were in New South Wales and how fascinating they found it, you know. So that's why people are always writing letters back about what we're doing and what we found and, you know, please send me some more petticoats and all this sort of stuff. But, yes, the Sydney Gazette became the record of events in the colony, and it was sent back to England, became a collector's item. There are plenty of collections of the Gazette and they're prized.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Grace Karskens is Associate Professor at the University of New South Wales. You're on RN with me, Richard Adie. This is the Media Report.